listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. So it's election season. As you might expect, here in our newsroom, there's a lot of talking about the election as things are going on. So after a debate, everybody's kind of muddling around, and someone's like, oh, man, I can't wait to see what Saturday Night Live is going to do with this today. Or just this morning, for example, people were like, did you see what Stephen Colbert did with Donald Trump's challenge to Obama? So I really feel like comedy has truly, fully become an integral part of the American political landscape. And if there's one show that lives at the heart of that nexus of politics and comedy, it is, and I think you know where I'm going with this, say it out loud with me, The Daily Show. That is a show that my guest today helped create. Liz Winstead is with me right now. She's going to be coming to town. You're in town to do a show on Sunday.
Yes, I'm at Johnny D's.
So Liz, tell me about the show that you're here doing at Johnny D's.
I'm going to take a look back at the 2012 election season and how we got to where we are.
Starting so, where?
Starting basically, I think, with when the House of Representatives decided that the first thing that they were going to do was try to defund Planned Parenthood when the new House took over.
Wow.
And then I'll take it down the road. Because that was when I kind of decided I need to get out on the road and start talking about this. Because, you know, we had double-digit unemployment.
Yeah.
People were like, we voted for you people to get some jobs created. And the first thing they say they're going to do is defund, you know, public radio and the national parks and Planned Parenthood. And so I'm going to kind of take us through how that happened, you know, who the players were as we narrowed it down to Mitt Romney, and then kind of the little jettisons that we had along the way with the war on women and with, you know, the president deciding, hey, I'm for gay marriage. I'm just going to say it out loud. And so take everybody down the path that
Remind us. Memory lane.
Memory lane.
So who are some of the characters that we run into that are really fun to kind of remind us about? Is it Rick Perry? Is that the one that you're
really there's, you know,
on?
It's always a toss-up. And as we recall, there was 18, count them, 18 debates. And so each one had their special moment, for sure. You know, Rick Perry, I think, wowed us all with his big economic plan to, I think, do solar-powered executions, which is innovative in Texas. And then, you know, Herman Cain, who I think was such a train wreck that he, you know, every day there was a new thing with Herman Cain, to where the point where he kind of just started mixing up all his mistakes, you know, where it was like, Libya, I did not have sex. Wait, what? No, that isn't correct. I think waterboarding's between a woman and her doctor. Wait, that isn't correct. I'm sorry. So, you know, just watching the sort of the parade of Republicans. And I was always so astounded knowing that there was some clear-headed Republicans in Congress and in the Senate who never said, hey, guys, this doesn't seem like our best field. maybe we should intervene and get somebody instead. There's Michelle Bachmann and you know, Rick Santorum, who, I mean, he may be the most conservative of them all.
So, co-creator of The Daily Show, I need to talk to you about that. And how did it come about? What was your role in it? And how long were you involved with the show?
I had sort of started building a reputation as being a stand-up who really responded to current events and politics. After the first Gulf War, I sort of had an epiphany as I watched that first night in a bar. And I had not paid close attention to how television media was giving information, because at that point, I think a lot of people forget, CNN was the only cable network.
That's right.
Daytime on television was sort of riddled with Maury and Jerry Springer and Montel and those shows. And then at night, it was a bazillion news magazines. I would watch this and kind of be weirded out at how much junk we were getting fed.
Yeah.
And then the first night of the Gulf War, I'll never forget, I was sitting at a bar on a blind date, and the whole bar was riveted on this TV screen.
Yeah.
And there was graphics and a theme song and that green light at night.
Right.
And the bombs were dropping and all these hot reporters were on the roof. And I remember just thinking to myself, without trying to be introspective about it, but it just hit me, are they reporting on a war or trying to sell me a war?
Yeah.
And right as I thought that, Yankee fool goes, this is so awesome. And I was like, oh my God, sold. And then I wondered how many people through the course of that night were having that same thought, like, this seems really cool. Look how we can have war now. It's surreal. You know, it disconnected people. And from that point forward, I thought, I'm going to pay more attention to how the media is reporting on other things and trying to manipulate other things. And sure enough, the second I lasered in, all of a sudden it became, you could have the sound down on your TV. And if on the screen was a playground in black and white with one single swing just moving back and forth, you knew that some child somewhere was abducted. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they just constantly pulling at the strings. And so I had started talking about this more and more in my stand-up act and really focusing on the media as much as the other political players in the news. And so Comedy Central had decided they wanted to do a show that was kind of responding to the world. And they called me in and they said, would you be interested in developing it? And I said, yeah, but here's the thing. The one thing I really think is important is, unlike shows before this, like Laugh-In or, you know, Weekend Update, I think that the show needs to be a character. I think there is so much in the way of satirizing how news is presented that I think it's really important that we take it on and do it. And they said, that's a great idea. So when we launched the show in this crazy media world, it was more like Colbert, if you will, than it was The Daily Show. Nobody broke
initially,
character.
Yeah.
There wasn't a voice of reason.
That's
I was there for the first 3 years. But I really actually love the way that John has become the voice of the people for us.
Very different than what Craig Kilborn did.
Very different than what Craig Kilborn did in his role. And I think it's great. And I left the show after 3 years and hoping I could get out there and start sort of sprinkling a little bit more of this kind of thing around. And I know a lot of people go, why aren't there more shows like The Daily Show on TV? And the reason is not because of taking on the media or politics. It's because there's no syndication money in it. Networks go, hey, this isn't like Seinfeld, where it's still hilarious in 15 years.
Right.
We can't keep
it's
making
ephemeral.
Money off of it.
It happens,
that's exactly
and then
right.
that's it.
Yeah, and so I thought, well, it's so cheap to make that, you know, that should be enough. We won't waste your money. We'll do it for cheap. We'll keep doing it. It'll be awesome. Not so much. So now I do it live on stage, and I get such great satisfaction of being in front of a live audience. You're also, you know, I don't pay attention to political polls because I can do my own. I go in and I do a show, and there's 500 people there, and I talk to them afterwards, and I see what jokes work and how my connection to what's going on in the world affects my audiences. And I'm kind of a one-man, one-woman polling operation myself just by being on stage. It's sort of awesome.
That is Liz Winstead. She's a co-creator of The Daily Show. She's a comedian. She is a performer. She's a writer. She's a producer. She's a troublemaker, which...
Yes, and I'm doing all of that here Sunday night at Johnny D's.
She knows how to plug herself.
How about that?
Very nicely done.
Yeah.
So where do you travel a lot to do these shows, or are you're based in New York? Are you doing a lot of them in New York?
Well, actually, I travel around the country, and what I have done, I have a book out now, too, called Liz Free or Die, and it took me about 3 years to write the book. And so... that's when I really kicked back into high gear from TV production into doing performance work because I couldn't take another TV job on while writing the book. It was just too intense. And so what I did was when I felt this assault, especially on Planned Parenthood, I decided that I was going to do a national tour for Planned Parenthood. I decided I was just going to go out and do stand-up while I'm writing my book to benefit Planned Parenthood because I think that they're pretty awesome and pretty necessary. And what started out as was going to be a 6-city tour, I just did my 25th show in Schenectady.
Wow.
And it's now kind of become just part of the working progress of who I am. And so that's been really fascinating to kind of look at that women's healthcare aspect of the world and life and doing shows and talking to people in all sorts of different socioeconomic backgrounds. It's really fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we've covered television. We've covered the stage.
Yep.
We're on radio right now.
We
and
are.
You were very involved with Air America.
I was. I was one of the co-founders of that crazy radio network. And
give us the highlights.
The highlights were I was in L.A. and it was... One thing that was fascinating was leaving The Daily Show and having 9/11 happen. Developing political satire kind of stopped.
Yeah.
There was a don't challenge the government. It's unpatriotic. You know, the shows that were already on existed.
Do you think that was right? I mean, was that the, you know, was it sort of right for a moment to sort of stop doing that? Or was your feeling that we should have pushed through even in that time and that there was a place for comedy and satire even in those dire circumstances?
I think if you're doing something that you can't continue to do in the middle of a national tragedy, you should have assessed what it was you were doing. Huh. If it wasn't rich, if you weren't clear about picking your target. And the reason I can say that with the utmost of certainty is that The Onion was the most brilliant thing that happened right after 9/11. They released their 9/11 issue, and it said holy effing stuff.
Bleepy bleep 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 bleep
on the front, which we were all feeling.
Yeah.
And it had hilarious things in it, like women articles like woman doesn't know what to do, so bakes American flag cake. Right. And then you know, terrorists surprised to find selves in hell. You know, hilarious things that reflected so much of how the nation was feeling, what we were doing, challenging ourselves. And you know, people think, well, what would you do? Would you take on victims of 9/11? And of course you wouldn't do that, because that doesn't, that's just a ridiculous thing to say. But to look at the world and who we are, and people were just walking around going, they hate our freedom. They hate our freedom. It's like, I don't think they even know what our freedom is.
Is our freedom?
What is our freedom?
Versus
somebody
else's freedom.
Somebody else's freedom. Yeah, I'm sure that it's because they didn't have Applebee's.
I do feel free in Applebee's
things
personally.
Things got crazy. Yeah, yeah. You should. Applebee's it's America.
So I took you off the track, though. So, but you were starting a story about Air America, the liberal radio network.
Yeah. And so I was, because of this kind of fallout of political satire, you know, I was taking jobs that, like, I did a spring break show for MTV that's mortifying, which I write about in my book. And, you know, there's just kind of, I had I was very close to having my feminist card revoked a couple of times.
You worked for The Man Show, didn't you?
I helped develop it in its pilot phase. Yes, I did. In fact, I ended the 25th anniversary of the Ms. Foundation for Women producing that special on a Friday. And Monday, I started on The Man Show.
All right.
Yeah, you know, I'm a giver of all things crazy. I am bipolar in my feminism, apparently.
Tripolar, quadrupolar.
I am many polars.
That's very good.
I am polar seltzer. So I'm sitting in L.A., and I'm thinking, I can't do one more crappy gig. I can't.
Yeah.
And my phone rings, and it's this guy on the phone. And
he's like, I have a crappy gig for you.
No, he said, hi, my name is John Sinton. He had this baritone voice that I can't even do, but he sounded like Johnny 70s radio.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm working with Al Franken, and we're developing a progressive radio network. And he gave me your number, and we were looking for a Liz Winstead type. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but that sounds like a guy, maybe, or like, you know, it's very suspect when someone says, we don't really want you, but we'd like someone sort of like you. And so then he went on to tell me they wanted to try to figure out a way to combat, you know, right-wing talk radio and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was practically frothing at the mouth to A, get back to New York, and B, to be, you know, kind of putting comedy towards calling down the power structure and calling down, you know, this sort of radio media and stuff. And so I said, how about me? And he was like, sure. I think he just thought that I wouldn't want to leave TV and go back to radio. But I just think radio, it's like, to me, radio is warm and fuzzy, and I love the radio. Yeah. And so I went back, and we were working 20 hours a day and developing shows. And I myself was not only developing the programming, but I also had a show from 9 to noon. And the last thing that I had time to do was try to find a co-host.
Yeah.
It was a huge bummer because I was like, oh, my God, all these shows are staffed. My show's not staffed.
Yep.
Chuck D had signed on to be my co-host, who I hadn't even met. But I'm like, wait, I'm going to be hosting a show with Chuck D? Like, I didn't even have time to, like, process the fact that Chuck D from Public Enemy
is
was going
co-host.
To be my co-host. But we needed a third person who I felt.
The second?
Chuck D and me.
So then you needed a third.
We needed a third.
Okay. And so you got you and Chuck D.
Yeah. So and we needed that person who was kind of who just super big brain, but could fill in with the vibe. And I couldn't find anybody. It was either the people were too jokey or too serious.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine called me who had moved to Western Massachusetts. And he was my first gay best friend. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of annoyed with him that he ditched me and then moved to Western Mass, you know. And he's like, come up and go apple picking and hiking. I'm like, I don't apple pick and hike, and I'm not that person, and don't call me for that. So then he finally calls me and says, you know, I have this friend who's works in radio up here now, and would you listen to her demo reel? And I was like, oh, my God, if you knew how many friends people had who were not talented. Yeah. I was like, all right. So he sends me this demo reel, and I don't listen to it. It's in the mail.
Of course
I'm like,
not.
Ugh, whatever. And then now it's 6 weeks out, and I don't have a co-host. And I'm like, I'll listen to the demo reel. And I put it in, and it's Rachel Maddow. And so I was like, this woman is amazing. She's really fun. Let's see if she's even available. So we call, and it was like at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'll never forget this. And I said, can you come down and talk to us this week? And she goes, I'll be on the bus in an hour. And she got on the Peter Pan bus from Western Mass, came down by 3. We were talking about booze and cocktails and, you know, the prison industrial complex by 4. And she had a job at 5. And Rachel Maddow was launched onto the national arena. Crazy, right?
Liz Winstead, she's a comedian, radio television personality, blogger, writer, co-creator of The Daily Show.
Bon vivant.
Bon vivant.
I don't know if I am that.
I'm not even sure what that is.
I know, but it sounds like you should just say bon vivant.
It sounds better because it's in French.
Raconteur.
Okay, so I have a couple questions that I want to ask before we let you go. One is,
why am I so pretty?
Yes, that is the first question, mm-hmm. which I was going to ask. But then after that, I was going to ask this question. Comedy, politics, what is it about comedy that you can do, move in the political world? Can you open people's minds? Can you get at things that you couldn't if you were taking it on in a more serious manner? Like, why approach politics with humor?
I think approaching almost anything with humor it just depends on how you approach it. For me, I have a standard bearer. I don't profess to have answers. I profess to have questions, which I think that's what my audience has. You know, it's like I have enough information to go, wow, it seems kind of weird that a guy that sits on the science committee in the House of Representatives and has been elected 6 times when he thinks that women have magical powers to maybe shut down a rapist's sperm. That seems not right.
Incongruous.
Somehow. Seems like if you are on the science committee, you would know something more than that. And so, you know, when you put things out there, you know, even people who are of a different political stripe than maybe I am go, yeah, this is kind of crazy. And it what it does is, I think, when you point out how it was that some of these politicians slipped through the cracks, or how it was that some of these corporations or banks got too big to fail, or just started being able to drill wildly without any equipment to fix, you know, massive environmental disasters they cause.
Yeah.
What it does do is it gets everyone to sit up and take notice and go, I can't just sit back. And that's incrementally slow. But I do know that when I point things out that maybe people have never heard of, and I do it in a way that's really like, hey, you guys, oh my God, you're not going to believe it. Here's the story. People sit up and they don't feel like, oh, she's saying I'm stupid. She's talking down to me. I'm bored. It's a, we're all in this together, yeah. And oh my God, I'm going to tell you this stuff, and it's amazing. And then people who do know the stories are like, oh my God, yes, tell that story. And people who don't know are like, no way. And I'm like, Google it. And they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, I know. And so it's
then everybody hugs.
And everybody hugs. And so it's a really fun way to get people to not only like pay more attention, but maybe take it one step further and start Googling themselves and seeing more of themselves. And when you make people laugh, or you are laughing with people, there's a bond there that says, I like you. And that's undeniable. And that part of it's really cool.
All right. You can see Liz live at Johnny D's performing Bang the Dumb Slowly, The Long Road to the White House. That is this Sunday, October 28th, 8 p.m. More details available on our website. That is WGBHnews.org. Liz Winstead, comedian, writer, producer, troublemaker. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks
on
for
Boston
having me.
Public Radio. Up next, Philip Martin takes us under the radar for our hyperlocal week in review. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III.